And welcome back. This is Steve Gilmore, and this is a special Friday edition of the Gilmore Gang. We've got some folks coming in from all over the world, or at least the United States part of the world. Starting to my far right, from the Big Apple, New York City, Ido Segal. Welcome, Ido. And I want to confirm, by the way, that we are recording. So this is the second show that he has done, and that's the second time that his dog is barking.
That's not my dog.
Oh, who's
I dog? I have a dog.
Is that Kevin?
It's not my dog. My dog's at home.
Okay. Joining us from Ribbit headquarters, Kevin Marks.
Hi there.
We're going to find this dog, I'm telling you, right now. Okay.
No one's fessing up.
Heen's got a guilty expression on his face.
I can send you pictures of my dog.
From the great state of Alabama, if you can believe that, is Andrew Keene. Welcome, Andrew.
Hello, yes. Welcome to you as well. There was some dog trouble in my house.
Okay,
it's gone away now.
And finally, or last but not least, from the great state of Ted, Robert Scoble.
What's up? I'm in the basement of the hotel or conference center where Ted is. So.
Is that where they put you?
That's where they put me because there's a really nice Wi-Fi antenna right over there.
Excellent. Did you? Did Bill Gates speak today?
Yeah, he just got done about 2 minutes ago, and he said that we need an energy miracle. He explained how we're not going to be able to get down to the CO2 levels that we need to slow down or prevent more climate damage. And he proposed a new kind of nuclear reactor that is safer, cheaper, and uses existing spent fuel rods as the fuel. And pretty interesting idea. But he's asking for a nuclear miracle to be developed, or an energy miracle.
I thought the iPad was a energy miracle.
Yeah, he explained. He ran through all the different kinds of energy, you know, solar, wind, biofuels, and other things, and explained just that they're not going to be able to solve the world's energy problem. At one point, he said, if you take all the batteries in the world and put them all together, it would only store 10 minutes of the world's energy. So things like solar and wind that are just not going to be able to solve the energy needs of the world.
Well, if you put all the batteries in the world together, it still would, my iPhone would still run out of power every
yeah,
day
probably.
Around 4 o'clock. All right, so in other words, he's not talking about anything having to do with technology these days.
Not the tech industry. Yesterday, several Microsoft employees showed off demos of some really cool stuff. Gary Flake showed off Microsoft Pivot, which is a new way to demonstrate or look at web pages. And that's pretty remarkable. And then the mapping team showed off a new way to see a 3D world like this room and be able to put live video of something that's happening in this room on top of the maps. And that was really cool.
There's a video of that on the web, a demo of that map stuff. What's the guy's name, Blaze?
Yeah, Blaze and Gary Flake were doing that demo.
Yeah,
so.
That's stunning. There is a video on the network, or at least I was sent one, which... when I clicked on it. Oh, by the way, speaking of clicking on things, this is a message for John Borthwick when he finally gets to hear the show. There are RSS feeds of this show that are produced by some guy named Jack.
Yeah.
And also Building 43 produces a downloadable RSS version, or excuse me, a downloadable MP3 version that's available on the site after it goes up on YouTube. We have no way of being able to convince Google to make an RSS feed available for YouTube, at least not that I've been able to figure out so far. So we're doing the best we can, and
You could there may be some voodoo way of doing that by feeding YouTube into Buzz. But...
Exactly. That was what I was about to get to, which is that since, let's see, May of last year, the ongoing theme of the show has been that RSS is dead. Well, this week's pointer to RSS being dead is, in fact, we got an email at TechCrunch from someone that suggested that he was getting two copies of his blog or something that he's flowing into Buzz, and he's also getting it through Google Reader, so he's decided to drop the FeedBurner RSS feed and just go with Buzz as the official feed for his content. So I want to congratulate him on that, and I guess we now have some reason to use Buzz. Ito, what's your take on Buzz?
I think it's very impressive. I think they've done the right things. I think they'll be a force to be reckoned with pretty quickly.
I mean, there seems to be a lot of churn and confusion about some of the so-called privacy concerns. Do you think those are important or just...
I don't know. It seems to me so naive to focus on privacy with everything we've observed over the last few years. I mean, people need to have something to talk about. It's like, it's over.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
I'm just saying, given everything we've kind of experienced with Facebook over the years and other models, I think people will get over it. I think they just need something to talk about.
Andrew, you're laughing for some reason?
Well, Ito looks nice.
Thanks.
Actually, he doesn't look that nice. He looks a bit like Big Brother to me. What is he talking about? What do you mean, everything we know? Who are we? What do you know? And I can think of many, many people who are deeply troubled by the privacy issue, and particularly the issue with Buzz. I mean, haven't you been reading what's going on about people having... You know, people's private lives being splayed over the internet by accident? Doesn't bother you?
I have, but I just, as I said, I think people will get over it.
What do you mean, get over it?
There's always a trade-off between, like, evolving the ways we communicate and this, or how we use the web and search in general, and the notion of what constitutes privacy. If you don't want, you don't have to use Buzz. No one's forcing you to use it. Like, just like no one's forcing you to use Facebook. It's your choice. So maybe people initially didn't know how to use it. They weren't aware of some of the perils of having their stuff being public. But they'll catch on pretty quickly, and if they're concerned about it, they just won't do it. And those people that want the benefit of using the service and the progress and the innovation, doesn't mean that it's right for everyone. But it's like this. That's usually what happens in these situations. Something new comes on the stage. It opens up a new form of communication between people. And it creates a stir, and it dies down, and people figure out how to use it and move on.
Robert Scoble, have you gotten over it yet?
I could care less about the privacy issue myself. You know, if you don't want it to be public,
don't put
it on
the computer.
I'm bored by the privacy arguments.
We have this in Paris. I'm going to say it again. It's easy for us as rich, privileged people who have some protection to say this. Go and read that article about the woman whose ex-boyfriend, who is a stalker, had her stuff revealed to him directly because of the auto-sign-up thing. Go and read that and then think about it.
I did read that, and, you know, there are some problems with news services. You have to learn what they do and what the kinds of things they share with people, and you have to take that into account.
People make mistakes.
Google has already put out one update and is working on others to react to the demands of the people. I'm just personally bored of this argument. I don't care. It's not an argument that matters in the long term. I think people will figure it out and either buy into these services or not buy into them.
Hear, hear.
There's certainly an argument that...
that's a reasonable argument if people have opted into it. The thing that they did here that was very wrong was doing three things that are coupled together. Turning it on by default, auto-discovering contacts, and then publishing those as soon as you clicked on anything.
Yeah.
Each of those individually is defensible. The three together is a nightmare, right.
and they need to fix that.
Rapidly.
Hang on. They didn't turn it on by default.
They did.
No, they did not.
No,
they,
you need to
they
opt
put
into it,
it. They made it available to
no,
you.
No, if you go into Gmail, even if you say no, you still have a Buzz folder.
But that doesn't mean
you don't,
contribute to
if you
Buzz.
You don't open up a profile, which you don't do, then the names of the people that you are exposing, which, by the way, has since been corrected. I mean, you know, Kevin, it's a little ironic. You and I, when you were a member of the New Borg, you and I basically negotiated just such an exploit over the contacts that were being exposed in Google Reader through some sort of chat mechanism or email mechanism, and that was fixed. And in fact, Google was very prompt, relatively speaking, in addressing the issue once it came to their attention. As far as I know, they've addressed this issue of what's on by default. They addressed it within 24 hours. So,
But you're always getting lost in, look, you're all getting lost in the details. I think Kevin brings up a very important point. And I think Robert also brings up an important point in the sense that, you know, we are living in public. That's our business. That's the nature of this show. It's how people like Scoble and myself make a living. But 99% of people aren't like that. The problem, and this is why Edo is wrong, is that we don't have that choice anymore. Given the fundamental shifts in the nature of the economy, the way in which we are increasingly forced, for better or worse, to sell ourselves, and the internet has become the platform on which we do that, the idea that we can choose to switch off is very, very difficult. That's the big problem. You can't blame it on the internet or even on technology, but these fundamental shifts in the structure of things makes maintaining one's privacy more and more problematic.
I agree with that. You know, we're undergoing a shift here, and personally, if you have privacy concerns, I wouldn't be among the first people on the first day to try a new service. Most of the people who are very concerned about their privacy, like I interviewed Moot yesterday, who developed the popular website called 4chan. He cares deeply about privacy, and he doesn't participate on Twitter. He's not very active on Facebook, and he didn't join Google profiles yet. And he hasn't put any information on Google Buzz. And that, I think that's the right stance. If you care deeply about your privacy or you want to keep stuff off the internet, don't be the first person to try something out the gate.
You know, in any case, Andrew, you say, you know, let's not talk about the details. The simple detail is that there was an exploit that was made available by Google once you agreed to use the service. That
not according to Kevin's good on detail. I'm not.
No,
so
no.
Good
Kevin
on
agreed
detail.
With me once I said what I just said.
Well, there's some other subtleties to it as well. In the way the following
well, we
works.
We can't have subtleties here. Where you know, according to Andrew, we can only talk about the problem, even though
well,
there is no.
The,
I can't have subtleties. You can.
There is. I think there's layers to this. The sort of basic compartment violation was auto discovering the stuff. And then publishing it as part of the normal process where you just, you know, you're just clicking through the yes boxes
well,
to make
the
thing happen.
Auto discovery is not a problem. I mean,
auto discovery is not a problem in
they
itself.
Do it all the time with Gmail, all those ads in Gmail, they're auto discovering all sorts of stuff. But it is,
no, but auto discovery.
It's all very calculated. I mean, it's not random events that happen. I mean, they sat there for a long time creating this product, and they had a spectrum of decisions they needed to make. To make the enough liquidity in the system happen as quickly as possible, and they decided to be aggressive out of the gate, and they had these fixes ready to switch it on in 24 hours. They knew exactly what they were doing. There's no surprises here, and we've seen similar dynamics.
Exactly what they were doing.
I'm not sure that they knew exactly what they were doing.
I think in general
they do, but not general, exactly.
What happens?
This risk of the privacy was something they spent a lot of time on. You can be sure.
Why can we be sure? Why'd you say that?
No, I don't think that they did. Because if they,
I can be fairly sure they spent a lot of time in it because I used to work there.
Yeah, but I mean, my point.
But the problem is
Kevin,
they have the same myopia that Robert has, which is they look at it, the world in their viewpoint. So they trialed it inside Google for a while, they've been using it internally, and it feels great to them because that's a closed community of people who think very similarly.
So you were using it while you were still there, right?
Sorry?
You were using it while you were still there?
I was using a very early version of it. It wasn't part of the deployed when I was there.
So did you raise the alarm about the potential of this exploit since you and I had worked on it for 2 years?
I discussed this with people there before, yeah, certainly. Okay. The issue is that what it does is it discovers the people you contact most and then creates that as a following list. But now that is actually a reasonable thing to do. It's better than a suggested user list approach. That's a reasonable thing to do. The problem is it then publishes that as a, here are the people you are following, without giving you, without making it clear that it's doing that, and without giving you an easy editing it option. And that is the bit that freaks people out.
No,
and
that's the bit that was fixed almost immediately.
The problem is, it's not clear that you have to go over to Google Profiles to see that. So if I go to Google Profile, and I think, Steve, your Google Profile is google.com/profiles/Steve Gilmore, and on there I can see how to follow or unfollow you, and I can see how many followers you have and who you're following if you've shared that.
Right,
with the
public. Because I left it on by default, number one, and number two, I went and followed about everybody who followed me that I could see, so that there's no idea, by therefore obscuring which of those were actually brought in through my email.
Right, and I trolled about, I'd say 100 to 200 people like you and Steve and Mike Arrington and stuff, and followed a bunch of people that I noticed. Yeah, I didn't see you, but, you know, you're always late to try things, so I go and troll other people's follower behaviors.
What do you mean by troll other people's behaviors?
Well, I did just what I said. I went to google.com/profile/Steve Gilmore, and I clicked on who you were following, and then I followed all those people.
Yeah, and the use of the word troll.
I'm trolling through your following list, and I'm grabbing the people that I want.
I think the word is
troll. Troll rather than troll. Is it big vowel in American?
Okay, well, let's get serious, because this is an invasion.
But there's some beyond, you know, the privacy issues that I actually I wrote on this topic in the last post. I did a TechCrunch on the iPad. I was talking about the iPhone and the address book and the fact that Apple's in a position to create a really useful social network by virtue of the frequency that you communicate with people, which is exactly what Google's done here. You think of what happened with, you know, Facebook, Twitter, in terms of more Facebook, this notion that you basically follow back anyone that follows you as a culture, and what ends up happening is it's not really a collection of your friends that you have any real relationship with, but it's a broader relationship. So in effect, and from an evolution perspective, it's what they've created is, I think, something very useful and something that has had to happen because.
Well, let's say it's potentially very useful.
Somehow I want, just because I am communicating with X and Y, that I should want to connect X and Y, and I should want X and Y to know that I'm communicating with other people is ludicrous. The whole nature of communication lies on secrecy, not on
it. It's called a social network.
That's bull. This system is a public system like Twitter, like
Gmail is public,
Facebook.
Gmail is private.
Gmail is private, but you didn't have to participate in the Buzz experiment, and there's a way to opt out of it. If you're gonna
post, but opting out is, you know, Robert, opting out is not, you can't play that game. What happens if the telephone system suddenly flicked a switch and we woke up in the morning and all our calls were publicly broadcast to everybody else we talked to, and then they said, wait, no, you had an opportunity to turn this thing off.
Yeah,
that's ludicrous as well, Andrew. I mean, if you woke up in the morning and took a bullhorn out and sat on the balcony and talked on the phone through a bullhorn, that would be analogous to what you're doing here. I mean, people are not stupid. They understand that they're exposing
themselves.
People
are stupid. Several people have said to me, I use Gmail and suddenly I've seen this thing on my email called Buzz. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it means. 99% of people are stupid. They're not interested. They don't read the fine print, and therefore they're incredibly vulnerable to this kind of thing.
I think they are stupid. I just think they're not interested.
It's not stupidity, right? I agree. It's not stupidity. They're just disinterested.
If you clicked on that buzz icon, and you had to go through a page that taught you what that thing was and what it's about. And the minute you join it, you would see that it's public information that is coming to you, and you have to follow people. And you would learn, if you're in the modern world now, you should know what Facebook and Twitter are, and you shouldn't have to learn what following and followers are.
Look, we can disagree or agree, but we can all agree that this will blow over sooner rather than later.
Well, I don't think it will blow over. I think they will fix it.
They'll fix it one way or another. You know, let's talk about what's good about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk about what's good about it, sure.
All right, I'll say what's good about it.
Talk about how we pushed the needle and we took risks.
It's a
mediocre
implementation of FriendFeed, which will get better.
Well, which more people will see, for one.
I don't care about more people. FriendFeed works really, really well for the people that are using it. But the fact that there is now tech support for coming from Google for the FriendFeed model is very exciting news. It might even encourage Facebook to plug it back in.
I think they innovated on two fronts. One is this issue of controversy, which is actually a significant innovation that comes with risk associated with it, which we've been talking about for the last however long. And the other, well, they're going to innovate and do it better than all of their competitors, is around how to apply search technologies to make this all more manageable.
Kevin, you want to respond to that?
Sure. So the stuff that I think is innovative about it is that it is built on the OpenStack standards that I've been talking about for the last 2 years, which is really encouraging. And it's designed to propagate those to a broader audience. Then we've already got a bunch of sites that do that. We've got ClickSet, we've got Superfeed, we've got a bunch of these little sites that have been doing this. We've got status.net that are building on this. But for Google to do this and to put it into Gmail is very significant, because Gmail is several orders of magnitude larger than Reader, which is where they were doing it before. So in terms of bringing it to the mainstream, that's a really good thing. And yeah, I've just had a go at them for the way they did it. But actually having that available to the users of Gmail who won't necessarily have used Twitter before, who may have dipped into Facebook but may not have spent that much time in it, I think that is important. And getting that stuff right is very significant. I think the assumption that search technology will help them find the right stuff to show us, I'm a little wary of, because I think that it is a different problem than search, and some of the nuances there may get lost. And some of the tone I got from Bradley at the launch was, well, we won't show you all those boring things about your friends having lunch, which is missing a large part of what ties the usage of Twitter and Facebook together.
That's what I'm interested in. I really don't care about the deep technical discussion. I want to know what you're having for lunch.
Exactly.
Right. No, what we need is personalized filters. And after the press conference, I talked with Sergey Brin about this very issue, and he acknowledged that this is, quite a bit of that the filtering mechanism is a black box and that it needs to be more transparent.
The other thing that's interesting about it was the thing that Yuri talked about, which is being able to define groups of people and have conversations within those. And that is that's an important part of the design. I don't think it's fully worked out yet, but the fact that you can say this is private to this set of people and then have that conversation in there is significant and useful. And it's something that hasn't been done well in other places so far. Most of the others have either been public or sort of permeable that they can leak out. And this has that permeable approach, but it also has the private piece. So that piece is good.
The one innovation that wasn't copied from Facebook or Twitter or FriendFeed was the integration with location. And here is Google Maps running on Android. I don't know if you can see it very well, but I can post. I just posted
a
post
from where I'm
actually physically at, and the integration with location is quite nice.
Yeah, actually, the announcements were. Nuanced as far as the maturity of the product, but the mobile stuff that they released is very mature. I mean, FriendFeed never has had a decent, or in fact, any kind of mobile client, and they came out of the box with. I mean, from what I can tell, looking at the website for Buzz, I'm using the.
Somebody's typing, and I don't know what that means.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm using the Nexus One interface on Buzz pretty much constantly as a result of the fact that the website has this very slow redraw as things fade in. I mean, they basically, even though they denied that they were
focus that close.
Even though they denied that they were not, that they were looking at any other technologies and instead were just listening to users. I don't know how you can listen to users when you haven't released something yet. But
they were listening to users inside Google. But, yeah.
A lot of people there.
Yeah, my point would be that I think we've got a lockup here on I'm just going to kill his audio. The mobile redraw and just the interface of the mobile client is far superior to the web client, at least from my perspective. And I think that has a lot to do with what is dubbed the Scoble problem, which is that you get these 200 or 300 comment threads that just stick to the top for days on end.
And they're working on, I just had breakfast with Bradley Horowitz, who runs the group that runs Buzz, and he said they are iterating quickly on some of the issues that they're seeing because...
So what are they going to do, throw you off the network?
No, they for one thing that was suggested is a strict first chronological feed so that people could see just things, new things, not repeated things. I hate seeing old things keep popping up. I already read them. If I want to read them again, I can go to them. And so I want a strict reverse chronological feed view. That would solve the problem. But they're working on other algorithmic things, like if it's a post that has 100 or 200 comments on it, don't show it so frequently. Show it, you know, once.
I think Robert just got irradiated.
Oh, I think the structural problem is that, in effect, what it's doing is it's showing us all of Scoble's at replies in Twitter terms, which means as soon as you touch something that Scoble's on, we suddenly get all the at replies to him, and it's not really clear who's saying what because they're not putting the faces on, they're not giving you the feedback. So it's very like friend feed in that respect. And it means it's very unstable for large entities.
I mean, who wants to be like friend feed?
Friend feed is better at doing the collapsing
friend
when you're
open. Is far superior to Buzz at this point. I'm sure that's going to change rapidly.
Much, right?
I mean, maybe not for you, but for those of us who use computers in a more advanced way, yeah.
Look what I got.
You have an iPhone now, right?
But you told me to get one.
Yeah, I did. And are you going to get an iPad when they ship them?
You told me I have to.
I did. Do you follow everything I say?
Yes.
Okay, excellent.
You're my father.
Just real quickly, who is everybody on this call going to get an iPad, except Scoble is going to be online with Patrick probably?
Yeah, I'm probably going to buy two or three of them, actually. One I'm going to buy online and one I'm going to buy in line. So...
All right. We'll
see which one shows up first.
All right, Kevin, are you going to get an iPad?
Probably yes. But that's basically so that we can turn it back into a phone at Ribbit.
On everybody on the in the chat room, would you please indicate whether you're going to get an iPad or not? Ido.
Sure. I'm developing. I have people developing for it already.
And what are they doing? What are the kinds of things that you're developing for the iPad?
Applications.
This is why we get the big bucks here, is that we really get down to the
Here's an app that's already being turned into an iPad app, Steve.
Yeah, we'll talk about Siri in a second. Ido, give me an
example
of the type of application that you might be interested in for the iPad.
Well, it's no secret that in the world of publishing, there's going to be some impact, and I think there's a lot of room for innovation there for an industry that could really use it. So I think there's a lot of really exciting opportunities to create new experiences that haven't been seen before.
So publishing, what kinds of companies do you have that are involved in publishing?
I can't really go into this right now. But
no one's listening. You don't have to worry.
Yeah. I just can't.
You don't have to worry. Nobody listens to this.
Yeah, I know. It's even I can't tell you guys.
Do you think the New York Times is going to be developing?
They're all going to be developing. Every one of them is, if they can get their hands close enough to it, will be doing it. And I suspect that Mr. Jobs will be going to town with them in a similar way that he did with the music industry.
Are you going to be simultaneously developing for Nexus One and Android?
I am.
The thing that I think about about Buzz and devices is that the strong connection between the Nexus One in particular and Buzz, I think it really signals that this platform has got a tremendous amount of leverage that that Apple has implicitly with the iPad, but not necessarily with the iPhone these days. You know, there's I've been almost exclusively using the Nexus One for as much as I possibly can because it aggregates so many of the different signals that we've developed in this social media space over the last 3 or 4 years. XMPP comes in through iChat. iChat. No, what is it? What's the GTalk?
GTalk.
It comes in through GTalk, which means that I no longer have to go to the computer to be able to find out where things are being tracked, where friend feed has a feed that comes through here. There's just an aggregation point that is, it's wearing the battery out almost, 2 times a day, but it's really a powerful platform.
But I think the fact that you haven't encouraged me to buy a Nexus One means it's irrelevant to normal people.
I think that's true for the moment. I think it is. This is definitely a tool for an advanced massaging of this environment while I'm waiting. I'm just desperately waiting for the iPad to show up. And in the meantime, I'm doing anything that I can do to get close to that experience. And right now, that experience that I can get close to is coming from this device, not from the iPhone.
Why do you want an iPad, Steve?
Why do I want an iPad? I can't think of anything I want more.
Well, elaborate.
It's a device that is going to absorb probably 70% of my computing time on day one. These streams that we're seeing with Buzz and with FriendFeed and Twitter, all of those clients are going to get subsumed into the iPad immediately. It's going to be the default device. If I'm traveling, if I'm moving, I'm going to use this. If I'm in a place where I'm going to be for a couple of hours, I'll probably use it 70-80% of the time. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
And Flash is dead, by the way.
So, Steve, this is sort of what I'm going to use my iPad for is the living room, and it's going to be. It's going to be assistant and things, experiences on my iPad that I'm going to want to do with it. Like, find me.
Interesting.
And do you see that?
I can't see it, and B, I couldn't hear it. So,
I said, find me a sushi restaurant near me, and it went and found me a bunch of sushi restaurants. Right.
Absolutely. So you're illustrating the reason that it's going to be 75% is that so much of the
so you can type more verbose things with a fucking sushi, right?
Typing is going.
What's that?
I don't get why typing a verbose query is better than just typing sushi in to this and getting it like that. You know, this sort of natural language.
Yeah, I don't understand. If you're using
what your system doesn't do was let me talk to it. Nexus One does. But it doesn't understand a lot of different intent, and it doesn't go to the APIs at OpenTable and make me a reservation like Siri does. That's where the map and Google approach falls down. This goes way, way beyond and builds an experience that goes way beyond the Google Maps. I can also ask it, for instance, what's the weather in Long Beach, California? And notice it was very accurate. go for that. Oh, let's see, it says. Checking the weather. I'm down here in the basement, so. And there you go. And so I can talk with it without typing anything, without poking anything, and it will bring me the world's information and the world's services, which is different than web pages and web information.
Which app is it?
It's called Siri, S-I-R-I. It's
where
the
is
closest
it
thing I've seen this year so far.
Can we get it now? And this is for the iPhone?
iPhone, free app right now. You can download it.
What does that mean, Siri? S-E-R-I?
S-I-R-I, right?
S-I-R-I. It's the Stanford Research Institute. It's where the mouse was invented. It's the same guys. It's a team of artificial intelligence guys who are working for the DOD or something like that and productized their technology that parses your language, understands your intent, and then goes and negotiates with APIs around the world to bring information or make a table reservation at a dinner or buy you a ticket on Fandango. You don't know that Fandango's there, but it goes and negotiates with Fandango and buys you a ticket and brings it back. It's pretty cool.
Robert, what's the difference between using Siri on an iPhone and an iPad?
One, I'm going to have the iPad sitting on my coffee table in front of me. So when I want pizza, I'm just going to pick up the iPad and talk to it.
There's no difference. He's just excited about it.
Exactly, although it will have a bigger UI, so now it can bring me better looking experiences with more information. The Google Maps that'll bring me back are small here, and on an iPad it'll be bigger and I can enjoy that more. Maybe I can buy a movie from Netflix. I just met Netflix's CEO, and maybe I can say, hey, I want to watch Avatar on my iPad, and it'll go out and negotiate with Netflix for the rights to that movie, and then it'll start playing it. And all without touching the keyboard, without, doing anything other than talking to this device.
I'm excited about Comm Apps, which is this notion of collapsing communications and all this type of stuff we've been doing with apps into one, and the fact that you have so much screen real estate, you can have the video conference on one side and select the car that you want from Hertz on the other, and the whole thing kind of starts meshing together. Historically hasn't happened, but Apple is in prime position to make that revolution happen now.
Well, I mean, we're doing that right now with this the chat room alongside the streaming video.
Yeah.
This is going to become default for all apps, is what you're saying, right?
And really, it's just a way.
Well, there's sort of a step backwards on the iPad is it has to be one app, which is kind of the problem.
There was an interesting article about Citrix, basically pushing all of the multitasking to the server. The so-called limitation of a single tasking operating system on a client is really a myth.
Thing you asked, how would Siri be different on a bigger screen? I could ask it to compare two things. Compare American Airlines versus Southwest Airlines and show me side by side what the times are and show me side by side what the pricing is. That's hard to do in the limited screen size of an iPhone, but on a bigger 10-inch screen, it could put those side by side and let me compare or contrast different information like that.
So what's the business model of Siri? It's free. I just got it. How'd they make money?
One, if you buy a dinner from OpenTable, OpenTable's paying a referral fee back to Siri because you transacted with some API on the back end, and they're...
We got a lock up here. All right, say it again, Robert.
You're paying an affiliate fee, so if you buy a dinner table, for instance, at your favorite restaurant, OpenTable will pay a dollar or two back to Siri for the lead generation.
Robert, you had some, I think, great insights when last real-time TechCrunch event about what Twitter should be doing in terms of encapsulating APIs into the tweets, et cetera. I mean, what do you think in terms of those ideas in the context of Buzz? Sorry to digress.
I haven't seen Buzz yet use the idea of a super tweet, which is a new display. Let's say this is a tweet. A tweet is sacrosanct. You can't touch it. but underneath the tweet could be a new display surface or next to it or a pop-down thing or something like that. Or, you know, I don't know what the UI would be, but there would be a new display surface that could display metadata, like how many times this retweet was retweeted, or a links to, you know, if I talk about Avatar, why don't you put the links to the movies just like Siri just did, the movie times underneath it, and let people click on the movie times? Or, you know, why couldn't it show how many, who has retweeted this tweet? You know, stuff like that. I know that I've been starting to hear rumors about Twitter bringing out a new advertising model, and it's going to work somewhat like that. It'll come out at the Twitter conference in April, is what I'm hearing.
And then this is exactly an example where Google has the upper hand by a long stretch, obviously, because of their competencies, and they could make that 10 times more useful.
I'm not so sure that it's an upper hand. I think that what Google is demonstrating right now is the power to move the market. You know, being able to, I mean, their strategy, if we believe what Kevin Marks thinks they have committed to in terms of open standards, their strategy is to basically make those open standards ubiquitous and allow multiple endpoints, in other words, competitors as well as themselves, to be able to come into the marketplace. So it's, I think the strategy is that Google does very well, but I don't think that they control the market. I mean, if they did, we wouldn't be seeing the iPad emerging from Apple. We would see it emerging first.
It's across so many. Those
are two different things, right? Apple is great at building a product. They're not so great at data integration. I mean, I was just talking with Tim O'Reilly about this, that Google is a data information system that Apple is really struggling to compete with. I mean, Apple has some really neat things in its databases.
I mean,
like
I know that
music.
I know that Tim has, you know, this sort of overall information theory about data, but I think that that's overstated in this case. I think Apple is rapidly approaching the amount of cash on hand that Microsoft has. So, you know, if they're screwing up, I'd like to screw up like that.
Yeah, and I think, speaking as a regular internet user, Apple does a great job with MobileMe in storing all my necessary data, my emails,
right,
my files.
But why are they charging $99? If they want everything to be connected into MobileMe, why are they charging $99 with it? Why did
they
delete all my contacts when it first came out? They don't understand the system as well as Google. When I got my new Nexus One phone, I put in my email address and all my contacts and all my apps instantly appeared. That's something that Apple just hasn't even got close to
getting
close to.
It's the Scoble filibuster going on here. Ido, what did you say?
I'm saying that Me has to go free or freemium for obvious
Why?
Strategic reasons.
Well, because they bought an ad company in order to allow it to go free so that they continue to make money.
Because
a lot of people would rather pay. Now, I would be more than happy to pay $99 a year to not have to ever see an advertisement on my email or associated with
my
email.
I didn't suggest fealty advertising.
Advertising is information. There's no difference. People
I'm just speaking for myself. And I know many other people. $99 is very cheap to avoid advertising.
Take that money and use it to buy groceries. Free.
I don't buy groceries. My wife does.
What did you say, Robert?
If you think this is all about email, you know, you got to go to a service called Google Social Circles, and I forget the URL, but I linked to it on one of my latest blog posts. And in there, you can see what it's studying about who and what you are. My friend feed is in there. My Yelp is in there. My Twitter is in there. My Flickr is in there, and a whole range of other things. And I know Kevin Marks, I looked at his entry. It's, you know, probably 100 different things, services and web pages that are being studied by the Google algorithms. That's something that Apple they aren't even thinking about that. They don't understand how to build a data information system that studies you like that.
I think that's ludicrous.
But this is a different model. Apple is building another model of selling media content to consumers, which is just as viable, just as legitimate. They're just crashing into one another.
so far, but, you know, I see that in the future you're going to want the device that has the best integration between all these services. Already on the Droid phone, you know, you're talking about whether to buy an iPhone or a Droid or a Google Nexus One. Google Maps is far better and has integration, again, with Buzz. It's the integration of the data that you're living your life with that's going to make magical experiences. And
oh, that's a nice frame.
That was a magical experience.
Repeat the last sentence.
We're down here in the Bill Gates probably took all my bandwidth. Apple, if you study it internally, my brother-in-law worked there for several years. They're not allowed to talk to each other about what they're working on. Google, Kevin Marks can tell you, every employee has access to the source code and can see what everybody else is working on. That's going to build a different set of systems and a different set of products than Apple is able to do. Not saying that Apple's model isn't going to be interesting. I'm going to be first in line for the iPad, right?
Right. And there's going to be, as Ray Ozzie says, these things are going to converge. All the apps are going to converge across all the devices. So
it's an interesting question, how long Apple can afford to not participate in the search problem.
All right, well, what do you think?
I don't have an answer. I think Robert just made a good case for why they're culturally so different in that respect. I think stuff like Buzz and Google, it was a strategic imperative for them to do. It really is. There is no choice. They didn't have a choice.
I don't know that he made a good case for it. I think he made the case for it, whatever that is. there's a case to be made for the kind of stuff. I mean, we used to be talking about Google Wave. We're not talking about Wave today. Why is that?
Exactly. I don't know why you talked about it before.
Oh, well, I can explain that for you if you like.
No, actually, it was my point. So
why are you laughing? Because you know it's a farce. They keep on announcing.
No, it's not a farce. It's just Ray Ozzie's been doing Google Wave for about 10 years. It's called Groove. The problem with it's not that Google Wave is either good or bad or indifferent. It's that there are integration points with the rest of the Google tools. You know, Robert talks about how you can see all the source code. Yes. Kevin points out if you know where to look for it. So, the number of evangelists, by the way, we're not allowed to talk to any of the evangelism team this week at either Google or Facebook, but hopefully next week we'll have them on the show so that they can answer all the questions that we have.
The reason that
they're not available, in my opinion, is because they don't talk to each other as much as they would like or are able to. So, Google has tremendous advantages in terms of transparency of a sort, but they also have the problem of being spread too thin. Okay. So.
But I also think there's a really, coming back, I don't want to bring up the privacy issue again, but I will. You know, Robert's point is credible for people who want to live publicly. But I don't see the benefit or the advantage of Google, Buzz, or Wave, whatever the weak term is, if you don't.
It's clear. It's about as clear as Facebook, and I think if you don't want to live publicly, first of all, you're not going to be on these systems right now. Why would you use Google Buzz right now if you want to be private? There's no reason for that. The only people who are using these systems are the early adopters who want to play with technology. Now, maybe that'll change in a month, 2 months, 3 months. Or 6 months, and there'll be some feature set that want to communicate
hang on
with.
A second. But, first of all, it's not just public; it's also private. The Buzz has been used internally, according to Sergey Brin, to great effect. As a matter of fact, it's in his opinion, it's helped solve some of the problems that they're having about internal communications. So, is there a reason why this is going to be used? It may not be used initially in the consumer space. Like the iPad will, but it sure as hell is going to be used in the enterprise space, which is why they're rushing to announce something. Oh, by the way, next week I know Robert's had a conversation with what's his name?
Mark Benioff.
And next week I'll also be talking with him when they make some announcements in a similar space. So there's a the speed with which the enterprise use of these technologies is going to explode is going to make many people's head spin. And you know, the stuff that Ido won't tell us about his startups that he's working in the iPad space, you can guarantee that many of these micro-messaging platforms and their capabilities are going to be used in these applications that are going to be breaking on the iPad. So to say that these two platforms, if you want to call Apple and Google two platforms, are you know, somehow coming from different places, sure, but are they're both converging on the same place, which is a very powerful platform.
The enterprise argument is really interesting because everybody at Google who's here at TED has been telling me how useful Buzz is internally. And I keep asking, well, when are you going to give me the ability to have, you know, a small friend group? Like the, you know, how I'd love to be able to chat with just you guys and keep everybody else out. And that's not easy to figure out how to do on Buzz yet.
It is doable, but it's not straightforward, yeah. You have to go to contacts, make a contact
it's
group.
It's not doable.
And share with that.
You have to make a group, as far as I can tell, in order to be able to say something to one person, which is ridiculous.
Yep, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyways, they're learning a lot by using it internally, and we'll roll those features out. And, Andrew, that's when it will be good enough for the average everyday consumer who wants to just send baby photos to mom and dad.
Okay, so we solved the world's problems?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go. We have to wrap at 2 o'clock Pacific. So let's go around the table, and I'd like you to balance the two innovations that we've seen in the last 30 days. And you can throw in Nexus One as a complement or as a part of what Google Buzz is. Which of these two is in your opinion, Ido, the most disruptive?
Out of iPad and Buzz?
Yeah.
I don't think they're even in the same ballpark. I mean, iPad is in a league of its own and ambition and potential. But Buzz, I give them all the kudos for executing and servicing the continuum in a good way. My book.
Kevin?
That's a good, interesting question. I think the stuff that's underneath Buzz is more revolutionary. I'm not sure necessarily Buzz itself is the revolution.
Say that one more time. There was some sort of cross talk.
So I was saying the stuff underneath Buzz, which is trying to build a generalized set of standards for stuff across the web, is revolutionary, and Buzz is sort of starting to manifest that and making it clear that this stuff is viable. Bring it to a lot of people's attention that before it was like, oh yes, that's just the social networks I don't use, was the reaction we got when talked about it. So I think that is significant in a way that the iPad isn't. In the iPad is basically a giant browser, which is a nice thing, and I want one, but I'm not saying it's the future of computing.
Okay, well, we got one from column A and one from column B. Andrew. Hang on.
Brighter.
Say, please
in
repeat.
Terms of the distribution and development of, as a writer, in terms of the distribution and development of my product, the iPad is much more important. But the Google Buzz is much more interesting as something to write about, to theorize, because it's much more culturally and sociologically significant.
Robert?
It's a hard choice for the same reasons. I'm watching Buzz more as a disruptor, but I think the disruption's to come. I think they're holding out some things, and that we're going to see those things evolve over the next couple months and into the Google I/O conference, and that'll be interesting to watch.
All right, and I'll ask the people in the chat room to. Please weigh in on this. Pick which you think is the more disruptive. For me, I think they are equally disruptive. They are equally important, and they are essentially a single platform. Right now I'm using Nexus One as my iPad replacement. As soon as the iPad ships, there will be software that will allow us to use Buzz will become by then. Buzz right now is an immature version of FriendFeed. FriendFeed has much more powerful tools for aggregation of multiple sources, for private channels, so-called groups or rooms, and many other features in terms of bubbling stuff to the top of a real-time sort that need to be copied by the Todd Jackson. Todd should use his FriendFeed account and work with it. And in the meantime, what we're doing is using the beta application that we've been developing, beta.newsgang.net, to aggregate FriendFeed, and we're starting to, as they open up the APIs for Buzz, to incorporate some of that information as well. So encourage you to join that. You need Silverlight and FriendFeed at the moment, and Buzz soon thereafter. All right. This has been the Gilmore Gang. I want to thank Rackspace for sponsoring the show, without whom this would not be on the air. The same thing is true for the New Tech TriCaster, which has been bringing you all these images from around the world. And I want to thank Robert Scoble, Andrew Keene, Building 43. Robert, you're getting QVC-like again. I'm not sure if you like it. Kevin Marks, Ido Segal. Finally, I think, Ido, subject to actually looking at the recording, I think we've got you on the Gilmore Gang, and I appreciate it. I hope you come back as often as you can.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank everybody who showed up, and especially those who didn't. We'll see you again next time.